Hi, it's Melissa. Can you let me in?
Hi, it's Melissa Gear, your host for Knock Knock Who's There. Driven by dares, rumors, or just plain curiosity, Knock Knock Who's There is about taking a look at behind-the-scenes Baltimore. On this episode of Knock Knock Who's There, the collection of enormous glass and concrete pyramids, cubes, and cylinders that make up the National Aquarium in Baltimore's Inner Harbor are quite a sight, even just from the exterior. Inside live more than 20,000 animals in air, water, and on land that greet 1.3 million visitors a year. So what does it take to keep the place afloat?
In reality, what I'm doing is moving a lot of poop around, because that's what animals do, right? They poop and they leave it in the water, and we filter it out and get rid of it.
Yep, everyone I met deals with lots and lots of poop on a daily basis, and food, of course. The staff of about 500, along with a small army of volunteers, keep everything swimming along and the animals happy. In the next few minutes, you'll meet the diver who pilots the Cadillac of all pressure washers, learn why it really is the early bird that catches the worm, and hear about the diet regimen of dozens of divas that call the National Aquarium their home, in habitats that range from coral reef to tropical rainforest. Let's start with water because, well, it's the aquarium.
My name is Morgan Denny. I am a life support engineer at the National Aquarium. It sounds kind of fancy, but what I do is I manage the pumps and filters. We take care of the seawater and some of the freshwater here as well, and try and maintain a clear, healthy environment for the animals to swim around in. In reality, what I'm doing is moving a lot of poop around, because that's what animals do, right? They poop and they leave it in the water, and we filter it out and get rid of it.
How many gallons are we talking about here?
We're looking at about 2 million gallons total throughout the entire building, Pier 3 and Pier 4. Now, about a million of that is held in the dolphin exhibit, which is our largest exhibit here. We have three other large fish exhibits. They range in size from 335,000 gallons down towards 270,000 gallons. So they're pretty large exhibits. And then there's quite a few other smaller exhibits as well, ranging from 20 gallons to 5,000 gallons.
So we're going into this door that says aquarium staff only, life support filtration room, which sounds very important.
This room is actually the life support filtration room for our Atlantic coral reef, which is a tropical Caribbean reef. And there's also the filtration for Blacktip Reef, which is an Indo-Pacific tropical reef, and Shark Alley Atlantic Predators, which is our large shark exhibit.
And I would imagine you need to make salt water. I mean, because if you're turning on the taps in Baltimore City, you're not getting salt water. So that happens here too, or are you involved in that?
That does happen here, yeah. Actually, our seawater starts out as Baltimore City water. So it comes in, it goes through a big carbon filter, which is essentially the same as a carbon filter that you would have in your refrigerator that you trickle water through. That removes a lot of the any kind of metals or chlorine that's in the water, which is normal for chlorine to be in the water, tap water. And then after that, we have some large bags of salt that we add to it. Each bag is about a ton. And it makes about 7,500 gallons of water. And we simply just mix that up, let it sit for a few days to make sure it's good and mixed up, and then we send it over, and all of the staff here have access to it after that.
So that's the recipe, a ton of salt.
Yeah.
Let's start the tour.
All right.
This looks like we just walked into the basement of like Willy Wonka or something. There are huge colored pipes everywhere that are like, my God, a foot in diameter and more. What are we looking at?
So this is the filtration system for our three largest fish exhibits here at the National Aquarium. So we actually color coded those to reflect which system they are part of. So red is our Shark Alley exhibit, blue is our Blacktip Reef exhibit, and then anything you see that's green is our Atlantic Coral Reef exhibit.
This is carrying the water mix to all of those exhibits, or filtering it?
So,
or?
Actually, let me start here. That basically, the water starts out in the exhibits, right? The Atlantic Coral Reef, which is our Caribbean exhibit, is about 60 feet above us, which is pretty high. You'd think gravity would do a good job, right, of moving water down to the basement here. It's not quite enough. So we actually have all these pumps over here. Those pumps actually pull the water out of the exhibits. And you can see they're color-coded as well. Black Tip Reef is kind of special. It's our newest exhibit. It was rehabbed in 2013. All new group of animals was added. All new filtration was added. So those pumps actually are on what are called variable frequency drives, and those are tied to a flow meter. And we tell the computer, hey, this pump, I want it to hit 725 gallons per minute. And so the computer actually speeds up the pump and slows it down depending on, you know, how fast the water is moving through there, which is kind of cool. And we also are able to control levels in the exhibits. There's actually level sensors up there, and they detect how high the level is at any given moment, and they tell the pumps, hey, it's time to slow down a little bit. The level's a little high. And they control it within like a tenth of an inch.
Wow, a tenth of an inch, yeah.
So from there, the water comes down from the exhibit, goes through the pumps, and then it actually ends up going through these sand filters here, which you can see there's actually six sand filters right in front of us here. They're stacked three high all the way to the ceiling. And it's really a pretty simple process. There's really just a bed of sand in there. The water comes in the top of the filter, goes down through the sand, comes out clean on the bottom. And now those get clogged up, because you would expect. There's a lot of poop going into the sand filters at any moment of the day. So we basically have to backwash them a couple times a week. So what we do is we shut off the pump, and then we literally just send water backwards through the filter. It fluidizes the sand, and all that poop lifts out and goes down the drain. Now, we actually can't make enough water to keep up with the backwashes that we do every week, so we actually end up recycling our water. So we backwash our water with all the nasty stuff into a basin, then we have another filter that cleans up that water, and then once it's clean, we actually send it back into the system. So we're actually conserving our water.
All right.
Okay. So after the sand filters, the water then passes into our ozone contact chambers.
And tell me again, the ozone, what is the ozone doing for the water? It's more oxygen?
It does add some oxygen, but it also kills bacteria, the bad bacteria, and viruses as well. We have good bacteria here too. And it also cleans the water, makes it nice and clear, and it can actually remove some color-causing compounds, like something in there that may be causing the water to yellow a little bit. It can actually remove those compounds as well.
And this is a process that is just continuous. It happens all, 24 hours a day, basically.
Yep, absolutely. Everything is running 24 hours a day. We're just here to do the backwashes and make sure everything is running properly, the regular daily maintenance, but everything here is running 24 hours a day.
And the fish just kind of get to swim along and go, yeah, this is all being taken care of.
Yeah, I think they've got it pretty good.
A lot of what we do is really around husbandry, around the feeding, cleaning, and the maintenance of the exhibits. I'm Polly Martell Bourbon, and I'm the director of dive programs here at the National Aquarium. So in particular, Black Tip Reef, Atlantic Coral Reef, and Shark Alley Atlantic Predators, which is sandwiched in the middle, they require anything from hand scrubbing to vacuuming, like you vacuum at home, like, you know, we get fish poop and lettuce and detritus. We also do pressure washing. So the corals, as you know, except for the two exhibits we have, which are live corals, these corals are fabricated and they get algae on them. So what we're doing today is actually we try to get in three times a week where we actually have, I call it this Cadillac pressure washer. It was specially made for us. It's a company that works with aquariums. And what we do is we literally pressure wash coral pieces. Now, it doesn't mean every coral piece can be done because the coral pieces, there's over probably close to 4,000 pieces in here. Some cannot handle the pressure washer. It's a very strong, as you picture a pressure washer at home, multiply that by 10. So you have to have specific training on it. Dan is one of our my team members, and he's basically pressure washing a lot of those big flat plate corals that sit in the exhibit that tend to be much more durable and they do well with getting pressure washed.
I'm Dan, a diver Dan, and I clean and help maintain the Black Tip Reef exhibit, trying to make it look like it did on opening day. I get to come here for about 5 hours a day, 3 days a week.
That's a really strong power washer that you're using. You had to be trained on that.
It is, but it's kind of meditation. I mean, it's almost therapy after you get used to it.
How so?
It's just relaxing. Just me and the fish, just breathing, pressure washer kind of fades out, not so loud, but just kind of therapy. But being in the water with the fish and talking to them and getting to know them individually is really exciting.
Do you feel like you've kind of created relationships with any of them?
I'm glad you put it that way, because I would feel maybe a little crazy if I said, yes, I talk to them. There are several that come up to me, and I feel like they keep an eye on me and make sure I do the job I'm supposed to be doing. But yeah, I get there's a few fish in there that seem to come up. Napoleon wrasse and the panther groupers come up to me, and I talk to them, tell them how my week is going.
And do they answer? Okay.
Sure.
I'm a dairy farmer by trade, so I milk cows for a living. I am Julie Mayer, and I've been here for probably about 9 years, I think, now. The animals on the ground are basically about the same as the animals in the water. You can see when somebody's not feeling good. You see when somebody's sick. You know, so when I'm underwater, I'm kind of always looking, are they eating? Is there something wrong? You know, just kind of putting that into the same perspective.
We are in the water at least two or three times a day. Essentially, we feed the fish. I'm Mark. I'm a dive leader. We're in here early in the morning to actually do what we call food preparation. So there's a lot that goes into getting the food ready for the animals. And there's a lot of food that's targeted to specific animals. So we have to get all that sorted out and put it into buckets. And then we, you know, distribute that amongst the dive crew and get in the water and make sure every animal gets the right amount of food.
Oh, so you're feeding as well as cleaning?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Hand feeding in many cases.
Wow. And do you ever have to kind of fend off other fish who are trying to get the food?
A little bit. Some of the animals are aggressive. Some of them are really going after and, you know, trying to get what I would call more than their fair share. But we take a lot of, you know, precautions to try to make sure that all the animals are well fed.
My name is Michelle. I've been a diver here for about 15 years. It is a work-life balance thing for me. I work full-time in the IT industry, and this gives me a break from my day job and allows me to do something that I really have been very passionate about for many, many years. I have an opportunity to get to know the animals one-on-one, very intimately, that you wouldn't necessarily get to do in an open water environment.
So any and all diving and or snorkeling operations here fall under my team and myself. So when people are doing working dives, feeding dives, any diving, and we do, with our guest immersion program, we do over 7,000 in-house dives a year.
Holly supervises a team of more than 150 divers. So between the continuous water filtration, the pressure washing, and the feeding by hand, there's a lot of work and a lot of people that go into keeping the fish happy. But there are other animals at the National Aquarium too, and they live in a rainforest that sits high above the sharks, the sea stars, and the jellyfish. I arrived very early one morning to meet the team that caters to a rather finicky family of birds and primates.
Everyone here is a diva, and the monkeys will actually throw out food they don't want. And all the birds will call what we do cherry picking, we like to say, because they will go and pick out the things they like first and only come back and eat the other stuff when that's all that's left.
Wow, so it's like having kids.
It's like having a whole lot of kids who are very picky eaters. My name is Tammy Walling. I'm the senior aviculturist in the rainforest here at the aquarium.
Aviculturist.
Yes, aviculturist. Just a fancy way of saying I'm a bird keeper.
Hello, my name is Amy Malarski. I'm also a fancy way of saying a bird keeper, aviculturist. Been with the aquarium for 5 years now, and I also cover the puffin exhibit downstairs as well as Tammy does, so we have lots and lots of animals on our routine.
The first thing we do is we start preparing diet. So a lot of chopping, everything is hand cut and or sometimes we use a food processor. So everything is hand chopped to the size of the specific birds it is going to. Cut it as small as I can without making it like mushy. Because our general rule is you feed a bird food that's kind of the size of its beak. So the parrots are the exception, because if you've ever seen a parrot eat, you may have noticed that the parrots will use one of their feet like a hand. So so they can actually hold food in their foot, you know, and bite pieces off, whereas smaller birds have to be able to grab it in their bills and eat it really easily. And we have birds that go all the way from around 100 grams down to our smallest bird, the honey creeper, who weighs 14 grams. So as you can imagine, he's going to be needing pretty small food.
14 grams, I mean, that's like the weight of a quarter.
Yeah, quarter, nickel, something like that. Yeah, very, very light. So if you hear that noise over there, that's Amy washing dishes, which is another big part of our job that's very exciting. We wash lots and lots of dishes, so yeah. So everything gets washed and disinfected. All the bowls get washed and disinfected every morning and every time we pull dishes. So the animals not only get very nice restaurant quality food, but all their dishes are pretty pristine. So
everything but the silverware and the linen cloth, right?
Right, exactly. And we would probably give them that if we could figure out a way to work it in there.
What does the food consist of that you're chopping?
Our main thing that we chop up is vegetables. So we do a lot of zucchini, carrots, sweet potatoes, sweet peppers, broccoli, and then we also do some fruits. We limit the fruits a little bit because cultivated fruits have more sugar in them than their wild counterparts would, so we don't give them quite as much fruit as they would like. But they do get apples, bananas, blueberries. The parrots will get oranges. We don't do oranges with any of the other birds out in the forest. We also will give nuts to the parrots. Everybody gets a commercial diet, which is a pellet. So all of our passerines get what's called a soft fill diet, which is just a little pellet that has everything they need nutritionally added to all the vegetables and fruit mixture. The parrots get something called parrot maintenance, which is also a commercial diet. And the sloths get leaf eater. The monkeys also get a special diet.
Each morning, Tammy, Amy, and their teams conduct something called the bug drop. The birds have been conditioned to come and get it when they hear this special sound. They know what's waiting. Big, fat, juicy waxworms, mealworms, and superworms wriggling with protein. So basically, it's your textbook example of the early bird gets the worm. The bug drop ensures that the birds are eating what they need, but it also allows the team to take inventory. Check and see who's eating, who's not, who might be grabbing more food because they have chicks back at the nest.
All right, so if you notice how many birds are already here.
In anticipation. Wow,
no,
yeah.
With the blue mat. All right, so we put down the bowl. We make the sound and like magic, here's everyone. As you see, the bands on everyone, how it's so difficult to be able to see everyone is the reason why we have binoculars. I'll try to start shouting out what some of the things are. So this little guy with the almost roan colored head is a bay-headed tanager, and he is one of our favorites. And then on the bowl, we have actually three. If you see the guy who's kind of a teal color who just flew off, he's the bird I was telling you about that's 14 grams. So he is a green honey creeper. It's not green, but the females are. The big guy who just landed on the bowl is our white-tailed trogon female. The male was the one you saw in backup. We have our female, there's Bessie Smith, red-capped cardinal sitting on the bowl. And then we have the birds that are all the multicolors with the kind of lime green heads and the really, really pretty turquoise chest and little purple on their throat. Those are our paradise tanagers. They're one of the favorites of guests because they are so colorful and so pretty. We have green and gold tanagers, the two green ones with the kind of yellow head sitting on the bowl there. This guy right here, that is our little gray screaming pia right here. He's about the size of a catbird, and I think he actually looks really similar to a catbird without the orange butt there. But they are the loudest bird in the rainforest, and I love them.
I think he was totally going off when we came in, yeah.
Yeah, you probably heard him. He does that a lot. Guests either really love it or they really don't like it.
And look, he looks so curious.
The only bird that I didn't point out to you guys yet are our silverbeak tanagers, and that's that little brown guy over there. The male has a really bright, almost iridescent, he's coming close to show us. His name is Tom Hanks. So he came from Houston, and somebody thought it would be funny to name him after Tom Hanks and the movie that Tom Hanks was in with Houston. Plus, we all thought it was pretty funny because Silverbeaks have harems, so you have one male with multiple females, and the thought of Tom Hanks with a harem is pretty ironic because I can't imagine him doing that. So, so we do have a little bit of fun with names here.
This just scratches the surface of what you can find at the aquarium. There are also frogs, puffins, stingrays, crabs, jellyfish, bats, sloths, snakes, turtles, a crocodile, and a tarantula. There's even an extensive animal rescue and rehab program. But hopefully it gives you an idea of what it takes to keep it running. Thanks for coming along on this episode of Knock Knock Who's There, hosted and produced by me, Melissa Gear. If you have somewhere you'd like to explore, email kkwtpodcast@gmail.com and let me know. Knock Knock Who's There is hosted and distributed by WYPR Baltimore and AudioStack. Look for and subscribe to our podcasts at wypr.org/podcastcentral or find us wherever you consume your podcast delicacies. Thanks for coming along, and join me next time on Knock Knock Who's There.